greater Phoenix. We can tell our story differently. A new perspective. A different look. Greater Phoenix A to Z.
Good morning, afternoon, or evening, depending on when this finds you. Welcome to the Greater Phoenix A to Z podcast. I'm your host, Casey Gilchrist. It's been a couple of months since you last heard from us, but we've been working really hard over here at GPEC, and we have a very interesting episode for you today. We're talking about technology that seems actually right out of a science fiction novel or movie, and it's growing rapidly in Greater Phoenix as this area emerges as a hub for vertical takeoff and landing technology. So we have two guests joining me today on the show, Thomas Maynard, who is GPEC's Senior Vice President of Business Development and has worked with hundreds of companies evaluating Greater Phoenix, ranging from Fortune 500 companies to startups, and has been leading the effort from GPEC and attracting innovative new companies in the eVTOL space. And also joining us is David Shilliday, Vice President and General Manager for Urban Air Mobility and Unmanned Aerial Systems at Honeywell. Dave, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me in your beautiful facilities here.
Awesome. So tell our listeners a little bit about you.
So my name is Dave Shilliday. I'm the Vice President and General Manager of Urban Air Mobility and Unmanned Aerial Systems for Honeywell Aerospace. And that's a mouthful of a title. And effectively what that means is I support all of our customers who are developing these new aircraft in VTOL, vertical takeoff and landing, electric or hybrid electric powered aircraft, as well as autonomous aircraft. So think drones or think future unmanned aircraft.
And for those who might not know what eVTOL is, let's jump into that. What does the acronym stand for?
Vertical takeoff and landing.
What's the E?
Electric.
Okay.
So you can have a VTOL, for example, the V-22 is a military VTOL. It can take off vertically, whereas eVTOL doesn't really exist yet. That'll be an all-electric version of an aircraft that can take off and land vertically, but also has the ability to flex and cruise horizontally.
And I guess the benefit of vertical takeoff is that you don't need the runway.
There you go. And so we'll get into some other options like that. There's also what's called an e-stall, which is an electric short takeoff and landing. So if we think of a VTOL as having the ability to drop in on a helicopter pad or a tennis court, a stall or short takeoff and landing is really a soccer field. Mm-hmm. So you can imagine it would open opportunities if you didn't need to have a full runway, but anything the size of a soccer field is also available to you.
Awesome. And how is Honeywell involved in this space?
So for folks who aren't familiar with all Honeywell's offerings, if you've ever flown on a commercial or a military aircraft, Honeywell was probably the eyes, the ears, the heart, the lungs, all those things that allowed that aircraft to operate. We make avionics systems, we make engines, we make backup power, we make wheels and brakes, you name it on an aircraft, we design and manufacture it. So historically, we have a long legacy in aerospace. Specifically to the UAM, UAS market, we've leaned way in. We've said we think this is going to change how people fly. And so we set up an independent business unit, not only to sell to those customers more effectively, think a very nimble, agile team that knows how to work with startups, as well as an engineering team that's developing those offerings that this unique set of customers might need. And one example of that is autonomy, right? Not every aircraft is looking for autonomy today, but a lot of these eVTOL UAM customers are already thinking about a day when they won't have a pilot, and we're trying to help them with that.
And what's driving this interest in electric? I mean, I know the whole carbon conversation is really important, but what is so interesting? Why is Honeywell investing in this?
Yeah, so let me back up just for a sec and say aviation, all aviation, every aircraft flying today is responsible for about 2% of carbon emissions. So that's not to say there's nothing to solve there, but it's a relatively small amount. However, it gets a disproportionate amount of attention, right? When Leonardo DiCaprio flies to Cannes on a private jet, or when Al Gore flies to Davos, it gets an unfair share of attention. So they're going to decarbonize their technology probably faster than others have. So that's the backdrop. So why is it getting such a focus now? Battery technology and new aircraft are meeting, right? Battery technology has evolved where the power density is getting to the point where you can really have a meaningful mission with an all-electric aircraft. And aircraft designs for such a battery solution are maturing. So the stars are aligning for us to have an electric aircraft.
And how close do you think? I think the first thing when you talk about eVTOL, people just think about the Jetsons, people flying around everywhere.
I was just about to say the Jetsons.
So there's obviously still regulatory issues and guidance that the FAA is going through right now. How close are we to actually seeing all of these people out in the commercial market?
Yeah, so there is an example in Europe. There's the Pipistrel Velis, which is an electric trainer aircraft. So two-person trainer fixed-wing aircraft, but it's all electric. It operates on batteries. What you're really getting to is when we're going to see sort of, flying past your 25th floor here, right? Taxis that can take off vertically and land. We're probably 2 to 3 years away from test, right? Where you'll see those on sort of a test basis. And we're probably 4 to 5 years away from seeing it in a meaningful amount. There's a couple of big upcoming events where you'll see them tested. One being the Paris Olympics, right? Volocopter has already stated that they're going to fly people to and from certain events. Pretty exciting. Oh. One of the things we'll talk about here locally, this is a great place for us to test out vertiports and certain routes. Think Phoenix to Sedona with zero traffic, right? What a great route that would be on your weekend is just to skip traffic entirely. So I'd say 2 to 3 years before you're really watching those first flights, and then 4 to 5 years before you fly to a city and say, oh my goodness, I can actually do that last mile from, for example, O'Hare to the center of Chicago on one of these VTOL aircraft.
So where is this testing? You think it's going to happen in Europe first and then the United States?
I just gave the example of the Velis because it is already approved in Europe and it hasn't been approved yet in the U.S. I think it will be equal parts.
Okay.
Let me go back to your regulatory comment, because today happened to be a big day for that. We, the UAM, UAS business for Honeywell, actually published what we called the State of the Union in rulemaking. And we took all the various rules and regulations and where they are in their relative stages of maturity, and we published that today. In part to help the airframers, the people developing these aircraft, in part to help rulemakers understand where there's disconnects between different regions, in part to help our peers and competitors who are trying to understand this landscape as well. We have a vested interest in seeing this market mature, right? And so we're not narrowly focused on those solutions that we offer today. We want to make sure that there's a healthy ecosystem developing. So that, if you were to read that document, you would say there's work to be done, right? There's work to be done in terms of aligning and harmonizing those rules, as well as specifically to understand what it's going to take for all of us to be able to operate one of those aircraft.
And you touched on this a little bit already, but what makes Greater Phoenix the perfect testing location?
Oh my goodness. Well, as you know, when folks like Waymo have used this for a test bed, it's because there's fairly wide streets and there's a fairly square grid here in Phoenix. All those same things would be true for the types of applications that you'd want to look at some of these aircraft for. You also have some great test cases, right? I brought up Phoenix to Sedona. Phoenix to Flagstaff is another great one, right? Think on an average Friday what that road looks like. What are things we could do to improve congestion there? Those are great test cases for us to try out. And there's a lot of airport facilities, a lot of smaller airports throughout Greater Phoenix and throughout Arizona that can be used to launch and land these aircraft.
And do you need to be at an airport?
You don't. So that's a great lead into, the development of vertiports or the development of other sort of central hubs for these. Ultimately, a vertiport is going to be a glorified bus station, right? It's just going to be a place for you to land those aircraft, charge those aircraft, potentially a place for the pilots and customers to queue. One of the obvious places to put it is at an airport, in part because you have, you know, the regulatory environment, but also because if you want to go the last mile from when you landed in Sky Harbor, you landed in Deer Valley to Central Phoenix, you could do it that way.
I think from the economic development standpoint, what's interesting about this or any new industry is there's a huge opportunity of where is going to be the next hub for, in this case, eVTOL. We think we have a pretty good business case. Aerospace and defense has been a legacy industry for Phoenix for decades. But I want to throw that question to you of what do we need to do as a state, as a region to be the hub for this type of development in the future?
Yeah, and I think there's a few frames of that. One, we're well engaged on, but we can always do more, and that's around developing talent, right? The engineers and the business people who will drive this market, we need more of them. And the more local talent we can get, the more it's going to drive that center of mass here in Phoenix. Think of Silicon Valley and how you get that center of mass and they all branch off and start their own companies. We want that same thing here where we're developing the best and brightest so that they can go off and develop the next solution. Full disclosure, I am local talent. So when I use that phrase,
You're talking about yourself, yeah.
I'm talking about it with nothing but love. The other is that would naturally drive us to be an early adopter of this technology, right? The fact that Honeywell sits at these airports, we would be testing these aircraft there. Naturally, that's going to drive those airports to be more engaged in how to get these solutions woven into their existing infrastructure. And then I use the word infrastructure very intentionally, and then it's going to drive us, right? We're going to be the first to know what the new infrastructure requirements look like, right? Think charging stations mm-hmm. for aircraft, and we'll be an early adopter of how we develop that as well.
I might have a silly question for you. Would somebody have to go to a specific pilot school?
Anything but a silly question. That is a great question, and it's one of the things we're working through in the rulemaking. Today, it would largely be the same set of rules that, think a general aviation pilot, somebody who goes out and flies their little King Air on the weekend, would be required to learn. We're trying to do a number of things in how we develop the interface of these aircraft, the cockpit of these aircraft, to make that bar a little bit lower. We know we're going to need more pilots than we have today. We can't keep up with the demand that exists for travel, you know, post-pandemic anyway. Now you add a whole bunch of new short-range aircraft to that, and you say we need X amount of new pilots. That's a huge problem. So part of what we're actively doing through technology first and then rulemaking second is going to be how do we lower the bar, not from a safety perspective, but from a hours of training perspective so that we can get those folks into the cockpit sooner.
And I guess this leads into perhaps autonomous. If there's not enough talent, how does that come into play?
Yeah, we certainly see a phased approach towards autonomy. We have something we call simplified vehicle operations, which is a nice way of saying how do we let technology make the process of the acts of the pilot easier, right? More intuitive, less training, less hours of training. That we see as the bridge towards autonomous aircraft. And so a lot of these customers, what you'll see that they're doing is they're trying to have a simplified cockpit in expectation that someday there's no need for a cockpit, is that you'll get on just like a Waymo and the aircraft will fly itself from point A to point B. Much like the first time you got in an unmanned cab and there was sort of a leap of faith, it's going to take a while to get folks comfortable with that. And we think the simplified vehicle operations is part of that path.
Interesting.
Can you talk to safety on it? That might be maybe one of the first things that people will talk about, especially the electric aircraft. It's a new thing. There's obviously inherent risk in any type of aircraft. Aircraft are very safe, but are those concerns is any different than a typical rotorcraft?
They aren't. And as you mentioned, aviation is incredibly safe, and there's a reason why we all feel comfortable flying the way we do. The requirements for these new aircraft will be exactly the same, right? But let's talk about what's different. There's going to be batteries, and there's going to be electric motors, where today there would be gas turbine engines. Mm-hmm. Electric motors are inherently more reliable than gas turbine engines. And so if you think of a gas turbine engine having reliability of, let's call it X, Electric motors are typically 10x. They're typically an order of magnitude more reliable. So that part is fairly straightforward. Getting people comfortable, right? The adoption of getting on that aircraft is going to take some time. The other thing I would mention that I didn't really touch on that's unique to these electric aircraft that is a big selling point is they're much, much quieter, like orders of magnitude quieter, to the point where one of these VTOLs is probably less than 70 decibels, could land at your neighbor's house and you likely would not notice it. That's a dramatic difference from having a 737 land even down the street from you. Mm-hmm. So that's a huge part that they've developed into their aircraft, knowing that if they're going to get broad adoption, it can't be, right, even as loud as the quietest of helicopters. It's going to have to be an order of magnitude quieter.
And touching on the supply chain of this industry, because that's something that we're nuts and bolts of GPEC, is how do we attract the supply chain so that we can become a future hub? What industries or ancillary industries should we be aware of?
Oh, that's another great question. Batteries are going to drive a lot of what make these aircraft work. And there is a highly fragmented space today in aerospace batteries where lots of different people are developing lots of different technologies. But the more we can do in the great state of Arizona to develop that here, again, that ecosystem that I described, we're learning, they're learning, and that's going back and forth. The majority of the solutions that are required for the aircraft, we have great technology and partners here in Arizona who are developing that. Think electric motors, aircraft systems like actuation that we do in our Tempe facility, the avionics that we do up in the North Valley, and that lots of our competitors do here in Phoenix as well. You know, great companies like Raytheon and Collins who develop some of those same solutions. We want that whole ecosystem to grow, right? We want them competing with us and creating a great market for that.
Do your engineers at Honeywell, is this the cool thing that people, that this is the projects that they want to work on? I'm just trying to think of someone that just graduated from ASU, they want to get into aerospace engineering. They want to probably work on this as opposed to, you know, some other regular aircraft.
It's a challenge for my peers. It's not a challenge for me, because you're exactly right. When I go talk to early stage engineers, they are chomping at the bit to come work in this part of the business. We have lots and lots of demand. We have aerospace projects, you know, as far as the eye can see. And so as much as we've struggled to fill some of those roles post-COVID, I don't have that problem. And so all my peers who will listen to this will sort of shake their heads in disbelief, but that's absolutely true. We get the pick of the litter relative to people who want to work on this, because there'd have to be something medically wrong with you to not want to be a part of this really cool technology.
And we just attended an international, you know, trade conference of companies of all shapes and sizes who want to invest in the United States. What countries do you look to when you're looking for startups to kind of partner with or bring new technology to the table?
That's a good tie into how international this business is. So we have a partnership, for example, on the electric motors, on the electric propulsion systems for these aircraft with a company called Denso in Japan. And Denso makes the electric motors for Toyota and a number of big automotive companies. So imagine highly reliable, low cost, right? They can manufacture these at scale. So we have partnerships in Japan. A lot of customers who we partner with on various technologies in Europe. Lilium, one of the first aircraft that will launch, is out of Germany. Vertical Aerospace, which is going to be one of the early aircraft to launch, is out of Bristol in the UK. And the list goes on and on and on. There's also a long list of them here in Silicon Valley, where they're doing development of those aircraft as well. But literally dotted across the planet, you could find a list of our customers.
Awesome. We'll take note of that, Thomas.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Another question, kind of shifting more general terms. How is this going to disrupt air travel of the future?
Yeah. It could be that what it disrupts first might be more traditional, last mile, right? Mm-hmm. The Uber you get in from the airport to wherever you're going. could disrupt that first because you now have a much easier way to do that. You carry your bag from the Terminal 4 over to the vertiport, and 15 minutes later, you're in Sedona. It's a pretty good...
That's nice.
That's a pretty good gig. Where you might feel it first is in things like drone delivery. And so a lot of those autonomous applications for VTOL, the first ones you'll see are going to be drone delivery. Why? Because your packages are less sensitive to the fact that they're getting on an autonomous aircraft, and they probably won't vote, you know, to not do it. And so one of the first ways you might feel it is seeing deliveries come to you faster, or deliveries come directly to your home that historically had to go that last mile via a truck from Amazon or FedEx.
And it could just drop it in your yard, essentially.
Yeah, if you Google or look on YouTube for a company called Zipline, they have some amazing stuff they're doing, particularly in the developing world, to drop off blood and other critical supplies. Zipline originally got started as a package delivery company out of Silicon Valley, and I think you'll see more of that technology taken on by folks like Amazon. But even think larger, imagine something like getting a specialty motorcycle delivered. There are drone applications that could carry something as big as a car to you.
Wow.
That, again, the barrier to doing that is a little bit lower because the passenger is a package and won't complain about the initial bumps as the system is worked out.
And this passenger, like taxiing, like an eVTOL taxi, is it going to be, I just think of, available to everyone? Or what's the cost of that? What's a ride to Sedona?
So I would say it has to be competitive with your next best alternative, or nobody's going to take it, right? So whatever it costs you in gas and maintenance and all those things, or what it would cost you to take an Uber from point A to point B, it has to compete with. So how's it going to do that? Part of it is that it's going to be electric from the word go. It's not going to be dealing with fuel. It's going to be able to turn those missions much more rapidly because it's not stuck in traffic. So there are a lot of economic tailwinds behind it. But the technology has to get you there, right? Because if it's not commercially competitive, and we've seen this every place, it's just not going to get rapid adoption. If it's just another helicopter, right? That's not going to have legs. For it to be enduring, it's going to have to be competitive with the solution you would otherwise take.
Well, it seems like there's a lot of venture capital going into a lot of these companies. And it's great. It's great to see a lot of them are startup brands and startup, you know, companies. But it's nice, or I guess maybe assuring that there's some big players on the back end that know what they're talking about. So that, because I would imagine, you know, some of these new companies, they would probably like to have Honeywell as a partner who's like, hey, we've done this for a couple of decades. We kind of know how to get things up in the air.
Right. And we're very critical of their business model, right? If we're going to work with them, if we're going to partner with them, we're doing that at the expense of something else we would go work on. So we want to be sure that they've got not only technology that hunts, but a business plan that hunts. And so the questions around what's the cost per passenger per mile, mm-hmm. those are things we've gotten into deeply with them because we'd happily go off and work on the next project that has a better ROI if we didn't fully believe in this market.
Absolutely. This whole industry is just like so futuristic, but it's so within range of feeling it and touching it. So it's really exciting. So are you already in talks with, you know, the major universities in Arizona and I'm sure across the world to help, you know, start planning for the curriculum of the future?
Yeah, that absolutely. In fact, there was some great engagement with ASU recently. They published a paper on sustainable fuels, and I happened to reach out to the author of that paper, and then he put me in contact with somebody else. And, you know, slowly but surely, you know, those connections around these future technologies and the trades of these future technologies and how it could inform how he was going to teach his class and how it can inform then those students that we ultimately get as interns. It's just this virtuous cycle that you can create.
And you mentioned, you know, one ingredient to make Greater Phoenix a hub for this future industry is talent. But is there anything that would prevent us from being a future hub?
Yeah, I mean, being late to the game in terms of regulation certainly is something we worry about. Senator Sinema is a big advocate of ours, and we've presented to her and her staff before on this area and the help we need relative to rulemaking at a federal level. But at a state level, we should be having those same conversations, right? How do we ensure that Phoenix is being positioned so that it's not just an open and friendly place for this industry, but the leader, right? Mm-hmm. Leaning into this space.
Absolutely. And I think Arizona has a great precedent for lowering the barriers of entry, especially in the automotive space. So we'll keep our fingers crossed. And I think you have good backers behind you.
Right. If y'all tell us the recipe, right, for how Waymo and others have done it, we want to replicate that because we think that's a great story. Why wouldn't we want more of that being developed and people being excited about it here in Arizona?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I know Chicago made that huge announcement with United Airlines, but hopefully we can bring that.
Yeah, we'd certainly like to one-up that in terms of some opportunity. But Archer, who made that announcement with United, a big customer of ours, we have the actuation systems on that aircraft. We think that's good news, right? Mm-hmm. We're certainly endorsing that, but would I rather have it here? Of course. I'd rather be, you know, taking that aircraft from the airport to my house or, you know, to some spot in the North Valley than someone in Chicago.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, we'll keep an eye out for Dave on the first aircraft to Sedona from Sky Harbor.
Awesome.
We're leaving that I-17 traffic. That's something we all need. Yeah.
Honestly, you just describing that put goose pimples on my arm. I'm just like, yes, please avoid the traffic. Well, thank you for joining us on the podcast, Dave. We really appreciate your insights. And where can people get in touch with you if they're interested?
Yeah. So if you go to the Honeywell website, you'll find UAS, UAM, again, Urban Air Mobility, Unmanned Aerial Systems. It'll point you to me or someone on my team. If you'd like to learn more, please reach out. We also were regularly on social media talking about all the good works we're doing. Look for us there as well.
Awesome. Thank you both for joining us today. We'll be back with another episode of Greater Phoenix A to Z soon. And we have some really interesting shows in store, including Prop 400 and transportation infrastructure, artificial intelligence, and my favorite, the Phoenix food scene. So stay tuned for that. Do me and our guests a favor and be sure to subscribe to this podcast on your favorite podcast listening app. Also, if you feel so inclined, please rate us 5 stars and leave a comment because that does help some type of algorithm. To keep up with what's happening in Greater Phoenix, follow GPEC at Greater PHX Phoenix on LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube. Until next time, be safe and well. Cheers.